Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Golf Shake podcast. We've had, been treated to quite the weekend of golf again, and we've got two amazing weeks of golf coming up. As usual, me and Matt are going to pick apart what's gone on this weekend, and then also we're going to take a look ahead to particularly the Solheim Cup down at Finca Courtesan this week. Matt, how are you? Have you had a good weekend?
Yeah, I'm good. Weekend was a bit quiet, to be honest. Watched a fair bit of golf on Saturday and Sunday. But I was golfed out after last week.
Right, talk to us. You had quite a lot going on, didn't you? And then you played, was it a 36-hole event you had on Friday that you were sort of telling us about? Was it Hunstanton, am I right?
Yeah, Hunstanton. Felt like a 45-hole event, the way I played.
Oh, really?
yeah, I mean, look, there's... It's a tough course, playing it off the black tees. Blues, their championship tees there. And I just thought to myself, just don't try and be a hero. Don't hit driver everywhere. Just try and avoid bunkers, for example, because it's like a proper championship linked course where the bunker in, if you go in it, especially fairway bunkers, you can kiss goodbye to any kind of birdie chances. And I just had one of them days, mate, where I didn't hit the ball at all well. I was actually okay off the tee, but, you know, like, for example, I tried to lay up maybe four times on a par five with an iron and put it in the bunker four times with an iron.
Nice.
That was a bit frustrating. I lost. Like most courses, the guys at Hunstanton were saying that it's playing so tough this year because the grass growth has been so quick, like everywhere, that the rough is so thick. There was a few lost balls that weren't, any other year probably wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have been pretty, but wouldn't have been in trouble of losing them. That said, there was some impressive guys. I think 3-under 1. I shot about 30 over. I don't know. It was stopped counting towards the ends, but. I do recognise there's levels. I post on my Instagram, just even kind of being able to get into a field like that is an achievement for me in itself, let alone, even thinking about competing, because, I'm talking about guys that are off, plus one, plus two, plus three, that are able to knock it around in, like I say, 3-under. And I think Owen, who used to work for Gold Shake, shot 1-under over 36 holes, so that's pretty impressive golf.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, it was a cracking, lovely golf course. A proper links in the sense that you just kind of play out and then play all the way back again. Yeah. So that was it was really, really enjoyable. I'll go back. Go back next year if I'm low enough to get into the field and have another crack. It's definitely a course where people that have played it before had an advantage as well. There's a few, not blind tee shots, but just tee shots where, the holes just kind of move, or there's blind bunker in, or, that type of thing. But a thoroughly enjoyable day out.
Yeah. Very good. I mean, it's good experience. I know you've had, a bad score or whatever, but it's still good to play in them events, isn't it? And sort of get the experience under your belt, I suppose, and just play them conditions and see how you can come out of not playing particularly well too.
No, yeah, exactly. Bless you. We had a perfect day weather-wise. It was a bit of wind, but blue skies, not cloud in the sky, nice and hot. It was just a lovely way to spend a Friday, to be honest.
Good.
Yeah. And so what about you? Played much yourself last week?
I played three holes on Friday, actually, because I had a bit of time to kill. We had a bit of a social evening at the golf club on Friday evening. I finished coaching and had, about an hour to kill. So I just grabbed my clubs and played the last three holes at Howley, which was nice.
3-under gross?
No, I was level, so not too bad. But one birdie, one bogey, one par. So, yeah, it was all right. But, that was the extent of my golf this week, really. I've just been busy. I mean, it just seems to be really, really busy at the club at the minute, so just I haven't really got time to play. But, I'm hoping that I'm going to the Belfry this Thursday, so I'm hoping I might. I don't think I'm going to play, but I'm obviously going to hit some balls there, which would be nice, because I'm going to see Callaway to be fitted for
new Apex irons, so that should be good.
Is that too? Is that new to test, or is that new for you to use? Or
that's new for me to use. So,
nice.
So yeah, I can't wait for that. Should be good. But yeah, in terms of playing, no, not really going to get any chance this week at all, to be honest. Just got too much going on. Like I said, the golf club's still busy this month, and probably most of October still busy, and doesn't really start quieting down until November, really. But yeah, it's a busy few weeks to finish the season, I would say. But you know, obviously there's been some great golf to look forward to. I've properly, as well as golf, got properly into the Rugby World Cup as well, so I've been watching loads of that. And watching pretty much, well, I've watched some of pretty much every game, I think. So
I do try my best with the rugby. Like, I sat there and there was nothing else on last night, so I thought I'll just flick it on. It's just not for me.
Got first game of the season this Friday as well. I'll be playing there, which will be good. So I'll probably be battered next time we speak, but never mind. But yeah, I mean, over the weekend, we've obviously had the BMW PGA at Wentworth, which we spoke about, the Fortinet Championship over in the US as well. We'll start there, if you like, because I was sort of keeping an eye on that just for how some of the players that are going to be coming to the Ryder Cup fared. And not many of them played, in all fairness, but Justin Thomas did okay.
Is he back?
I wouldn't say he's back, because if he was back, he'd have won. But I think he did all right, yeah. He played quite well, and he probably had a chance going into the last day, but he needed to shoot a low one. But to be honest, from start to finish, Sahith Theegala looked pretty good, and almost uncatchable, really. Won by two in the end. But yeah, it was pretty comfortable for him, to be honest. I tend to watch more golf in the US, to be honest, because of the time of day it's on. It's just easier to watch, isn't it? Once you've got the kids to bed and stuff like that, you can kind of sit down and watch the PGA Tour a little bit. But
it was on quite late, though, wasn't it?
I struggled to watch anything from Wentworth yesterday because it's just right in the middle of the day, isn't it? And it's just so difficult to see. But I was sort of keeping up to date with it on my phone. I had the radio on as well when I was outside with the kids and listening to it. But no, it seemed like... I mean, it's an amazing win for starters for Ryan Fox. I mean, he's been a pretty consistent player over the last sort of two or three years anyway. This is obviously the biggest event that he'll have won. And to take down the quality that was in the field as well, I think I saw a video on social media yesterday of him basically saying to his, I don't know if it was his caddy or his wife, look at the leaderboard and see who I've kind of beaten. Do you know what I mean? And he was just reading off, you know, Fleetwood, Rahm, McIlroy, Hatton, all these names underneath it.
And to be fair, like I always look at the scores on a Sunday. You know, like he had to win it, right? Everyone else around him, other than Tommy Fleetwood, who shot level par, and I think Callum Shinkwin was level par. You know, Aaron Rye shot 4 under, Till Hatton shot 6 under, John Rahm 4, Victor Hovland 5. At one point, I thought, here we go, Rory's coming. You know, he shot 7 under. I was a bit disappointed with Ludwig's rounds yesterday.
Yeah, me too. I mean, he'll be disappointed as well because we're going into the final round with a lead, and then he just had the worst start ever, didn't he? Really?
Yeah. Like,
you're just not gonna come back from that. But he'll live to fight another day. The fact that he's got there in the first place shows he's still playing well.
He's had a really busy couple of weeks as well, right?
Yeah,
probably had a lot going on. He might just have run out of jukes at the end.
Yeah, and I think he said earlier on in the week that he was going to head down to the Solheim Cup because I think his caddy is engaged to Madeline Sagstrom, is that right?
Right, okay.
So he's going down there to watch and do some practice before he heads over to Rome for the Ryder Cup. So expect to see him walking the fairways of Finca Courtesan this week. But yeah, I mean, he'll be a bit disappointed. I'm sure he will because it was a massive event that he could have won, but he didn't. These guys, you know, the seasoned kind of performers on this tour generally come out somewhere near the top. Rahm, I thought, was doing great. Hatton, I thought, probably was going to win yesterday. Do you know what I mean? I think halfway through the day, he looked certain to win and then went and hit one out of town.
As it started to rain, wasn't it? He hit one off the planet. It was at that point, to be honest, I'd fished out last week's podcast because I'd I'd called Tyrrell last week, didn't I?
Yeah, you did say Tyrrell Hatton was going to do well.
I said he'd do well, and to be fair, your pick, Connor, you said Connor Syme, didn't you?
Yeah, he was doing great, again, he didn't play great yesterday. Was he two over or something yesterday? I think he ran a little bit, but yeah, I mean, he's just... Yeah.
But, you know, those two, like Aberg and Connor Syme, you know, shooting four over and two over in the final round and still finishing in the top 10. Yeah. I think whilst they won't be happy, you can definitely take a lot of positives away from that.
Yeah, of course.
I think I was more impressed with Aberg, the way he handled himself over the first couple of days playing with Rory as well.
Yeah.
You know, because he outscored him by quite a long way, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, for Rory to finish where he did, having only just made the cut, to be fair.
Well, remember he held that birdie putt, didn't he, on Saturday night, Friday night in the darkness to make the cut.
Yeah. Just shows how good he is, really, doesn't it? I mean, the one for me that's becoming increasingly disappointing is Fleetwood, because he just seems to get in good positions and just doesn't finish it off.
Right. And somebody said something to me yesterday, and I promised that I'd use it on the podcast.
Okay.
And somebody called Tommy Fleetwood the European Chauffelet.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I thought, yeah, do you know what? It's not a bad shout, is it? Always seems to be in and around the mix, but...
He's just so good. I can't fathom what it is. I mean, it's obviously very hard to win at that level.
And, yeah.
You know, to say, you know, he should be converting these into wins, he knows that. Do you know what I mean? He's not stupid.
No.
And if he keeps getting in those positions, he will finish some off. Do you know what I mean?
Eventually.
I think it's because we're... always watching for him, particularly when he's playing in America, because he's an English player or European player. We're always sort of keeping an eye on what he's doing, and I mean, it's tough. I mean, no one plays bad on purpose, and I don't really think he's the sort of guy who lets things get to him too much when he's playing golf. So I don't think it's a nerves thing. I think it's more just, you know, he maybe just doesn't perform when he needs to, and that's disappointing, really. You know, if he'd have shot that level par on the first day and then, you know, shot the three in a different shot those rounds in a different order, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I mean, it's just one of those.
No. But team Europe, very good display. Do you, off the top of your head, do you want to know, have a guess how many collectively, how many under par they were?
Oh, I don't know. I would have said, let me think.
Come on, quick. You're adding it up. Quick.
73.
128.
Wow.
And Nicola Højgaard was level par.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yep. So actually, you look at McIntyre at 4 under, Justin Rose at 5 under. But then you've got Fitzpatrick, Lowry at 10, Straka and Aberg 12, 13 Rory, 14 Fleetwood, 15 Hovland, 16 Rahm, 17 Hatton. Wow. So literally 10 of the... 9 of the 12 top 20, pretty decent.
Yeah, that's very good, very good.
Only Ryan Fox
as well. I mean, you know, we just hope that they can keep that form going for a couple of weeks, don't we?
They'll be fine.
And who's to say they won't? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, looking at the, you know, we obviously spoke about the Fortinet Championship before. I couldn't really see many of their players in there. There was Max Homer and
Justin Thomas.
JT, I think, yeah. And I couldn't really see many others. I think the rest of them have probably decided they're going to head over to Marco Simone maybe early and get some practice done. But, yeah, it seemed like it was just those two. And... you know, were they playing because it was they were trying to find some form? I don't know. Both of them played okay. Obviously, I spoke about Justin Thomas before. He finished fifth, 15 under, which is pretty good. And Homer tied seventh on 13 under. So then they didn't play badly at all. And yeah, hopefully they've found, well, not hopefully, actually, they found a bit of form before the Ryder Cup, but we'll see. But our attentions really this week are all going to be on the Solheim, aren't they? Yeah, we've got obviously for the Europeans, I don't know whether it is for Americans, almost the pinnacle of their golfing careers, really, playing in Solheim Cups and representing Team Europe. And what a team we've got, Matt. I mean, I don't know if you want to read it out or you want me to, but I think when you read down our list of players, very, very strong.
Yeah, so we've got Celine Boutier, Maya Stark, Charlie Hole, Leona Maguire. We've got Georgia Hall, Lynn Grant, Carlotta Seganda, Anna Nordqvist. Then we have Madeline Sagstrom, Gemma Driver, Emily Pedersen, Caroline Hedwall. They are your 12.
They are.
That's stacked, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. I mean, there's when you look in contrast to the US team, yes, there's some great players in there, don't get me wrong. There's actually three in there I don't think I've ever heard of, which, you know, and we do this podcast every week and we look at all the women's golf and the majors and things like that. We probably don't do as much LPGA Tour as we do Ladies European Tour, maybe. But, you know, and I wouldn't say I'm watching ladies golf every week. I do keep up with what's going on, but I would have thought I'd heard of every single player that's playing. And I have on the European side, absolutely.
Yeah.
And most of the American team I have, but there's a few players out there that I just, yeah, I had to almost Google and look where they were from and what they'd done and all this kind of stuff. But
yeah,
they're all obviously going to be great players, but just,
yeah, I mean, Europe have only got three rookies.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Two of which is Lynn Grant and Maya Stark. And to be honest, you can just chuck them together and they'll go nuts.
Yeah.
Interesting that Anna Nordqvist is a playing vice captain as well. So I'm not sure how much she'll play, but I mean, this is her 15th Solheim.
Wow.
So that's.
Really? Wow. Can't wait. I mean, she's been playing for 30 years.
Oh no, I was looking at you've got there how many Solheim Cups they've played in, and then underneath the Solheim record and it says 14, but that's 14 okay. wins.
Fair enough.
That's 14 wins, not 14 Solheims. Yeah, that's quite a lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This will be our 8th.
That's still pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, it's wow. good. And it just feels like that. I think you need your marquee players for Europe. It feels like, you know, Charlie Hole has just hit form right at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, and as I say, there's something in the water in Scandinavia, isn't there, as far as golf's concerned, not just...
I think so. Well, I think the Annika effect is massive, isn't it, over there?
Yeah. Know?
Getting girls into the game and...
Well, not. I mean, obviously men as well, you know. You look at the Højgaards, you look at Åberg, you look at... loads. Do you know what I mean? Loads.
And I'd imagine Stenson's had a fair bit to do with that as well.
So yes, definitely.
It's very, very good. Yeah, amazing. I mean, Celine Boutier for me. I mean, what a year she's had. Playing great golf, like you say. Charlie, Leona Maguire seems to be in the top 10 every single event you look at. Anna Nordqvist, we've already mentioned, is just very, very solid player, as is Caroline Hedvall. Carlotta Seganda literally is almost the Ian Poulter type character in the Solheim. She's just so gutsy, isn't she? And just literally grinds people down and seems to deliver all the time. So she's, yeah, very, very good player. I mean, the American side, Lilia Vu, who's obviously won twice, two majors this year, which is amazing.
Yeah, world number one.
But then, you know, outside of that was almost... We said on the podcast, there was times when after she won a major this year, she honestly didn't think she'd ever win again. So bad was her game. So you don't know what she's coming in with or what mindset. Nelly Korda, obviously amazing. Alison Corpus, Megan Kang, Jennifer Kupcho, Danielle Kang, Andrea Lee, Lexi Thompson, Rose Zhang. I mean, she's got a hell of a future ahead of her in the game. Angel Lin, Ali Ewing, and Cheyenne Knight make up the 12 players for the US. So, I mean, there's obviously some great players in there, Matt. I'm not saying that Europe are going to walk this, but it's not going to be a walk in the park for them, but I still think they're going to win. And I think they're going to win quite well.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, that's not to say, there's obviously strength in the American team.
I think it helps that it's outside of the US as well.
I think so, yeah. I think the home advantage will really help.
You've got players like Seganda and they're in their home country. And yeah, I mean, it's just going to be, yeah, the roof's going to get blown off. Finger cutters, I think. Do you know much about the golf course, Matt, or not?
No, I don't. I know that I know it's Very undulating, but that is pretty much all I know. I've actually been to Le Finca.
Start there, really. So the first hole, as they'll play it, is a par four. It's got water all the way up the left, and it's 280 yards. So you could have people having a pop at it, I don't know, or certainly getting quite close. So I'd imagine if you've got some of the bigger hitters up there, they're probably going to get fairly close to the green. Maybe you might even see someone knock it on. I don't know. And there are two par fives of the first four holes as well. So you could see some birdies and eagles flying around. You never know. But yeah, I'm not sure it favours the longer hitter, but certainly if you've got a bit of length in your game, then potentially there's a few of these holes that are gettable and you could get up quite early, really, and maybe, you know, sort of stamp a bit of authority in your match potentially. But no, it's just a very, very good golf course, to be honest. And, you know, I think there's another par five in about the first six or seven holes as well. So that, you know, there's plenty of scoring opportunities there. But like you say, it's a typical Spanish golf course, really. So
yeah.
It's undulating. The greens are going to be quite slopey and tricky, and probably the weather they've been having over there, it might be quite firm as well. So I don't know, but I guess we'll get to see it a little bit more this week when we start to see the players there having a bit of a practice and going out on the golf course. But you know, it's sure to be a hell of a week. So I mean, in terms of last week we had a bit of a chat about pairings and partnerships and stuff. Have you had a think about this with the Solheim or not really?
Not really. Sorry. I think there's some that kind of I think they almost make themselves sometimes. Like I do find it with the Ryder Cup as well. You know, like when you've got players like Lynn Grant and Meyer Stark, who obviously, you know, very similar age, would have played so much golf together. That makes absolute sense to me. You've got Georgia Hall and Charlie Hall were pretty much best mates, I believe, off the golf course. You know, then you look at the I'd look at, say, like Celine Boutier and Carlotta Siganda. You'd feel like that they would kind of pair off pretty well together. We've got four Swedes in the team, so then you've got Caroline Hedwall and Sagstrom, and you can mix those four around. And I think they're blessed with kind of natural pairings, it would feel to me, as far as Europe is concerned.
Yeah, the only one, I mean, she could play with anybody, but Leona Maguire's one that I just think, who would you put her with?
I'd put her with Gemma Driver.
Would you?
Yeah. Even if that's kind of like a, and I don't mean this kind of disrespectfully, even if that's kind of like a process of elimination by kind of pairing off everybody else together. Yeah, because
maybe it is. I mean, I don't know, but I just think she's one of our best players, and you've got to get her out there as much as possible.
Yeah.
And particularly how good she was last time she played in the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, I mean, you could, for example, you could stick her with Charlie Hull. I think that would be a formidable pair together. You know, I don't know enough about Georgia Hall's form to know if she's going to play loads to start with, for example.
She's streaking, so, really. I mean, she seems to play great and then go off the boil a bit and then great again. So
yeah,
this week's one of a great week.
But I could just imagine Leona's got that Irish fire in her belly, you know. It's,
I'm sure she has.
Yeah. So yeah, so I think Europe are blessed. I said four Swedes, didn't I? There's five if you include Anna Nordqvist as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you know, I feel like maybe they pick themselves. But we'll see. It'd be interesting to see what happens on the first day.
And I think having, you know, a Scandinavian captain as well helps, you know, with a having Suzanne there. She's obviously won it last time out and you know, hold the winning putt and showed her kind of bottle and nerve and kind of under all that pressure is amazing. Does that give her a bit of a, you know, an advantage potentially over?
Absolutely. I mean, she's a young captain as well, right? So it's, she would have played with pretty much, you know, other than the rookies this year, she would have played in a Solheim with all of these players in the past.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's a good transition to get her into being a captain early doors. And yeah, like you say, when 50% of your playing team is from Scandinavia, I don't think it's going to hurt having a Scandinavian captain, to be honest.
No, not at all.
So yeah, just it, you know, it's we're probably tearing this up for an absolute hammering by Team USA, but it almost feels like everything's just kind of aligning together for Team Europe, really.
I hope so. We're going to look really stupid next week if we get a battering, aren't we?
Yeah, we absolutely are. but I think we're only saying what everybody else is thinking.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I can't see anything but a European win, but, you know, there's always that chance. The Americans aren't bad players, as I've said.
No.
They gel nicely and they kind of get ahead early, and you never know in these things, do you? I mean, we've said this before in the Ryder Cup and thought we were going to do great, or thought the Americans were going to trounce us, and they haven't. And it's a very, and this is a conversation we're probably going to have next week as well when we look forward to the Ryder Cup. But yeah, it's obviously sport is very difficult to call. You get, not saying America are underdogs, but you get stories like that all the time where a team, you know, knows they're going in and expected to lose, and all of a sudden find something a little bit extra, an extra couple of percent here and there, and they win. So you never know. You never know.
You never know.
So, I mean, we've obviously got that this week, Ryder Cup next week, and obviously we'll be talking a lot about that. What does the next week hold for you, Matt, when it comes to golf? What are you doing?
Do you know what? I'm sitting in now, so it's about 9:30 Monday morning.
Yes, yeah, an early one for this, by the way.
It's an early one. I'm trying to work out where my golf is coming from this week. I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to do something that I've not done for quite a while, and that's a solid bit of practice.
Okay.
I do enjoy practice. I do enjoy hitting balls. I do prefer this time of year to do it off grass. So I'm just trying to think if I can get up to Felix so to hit ball today, but if the weather's a bit iffy.
Yeah, you want to be under cover by range. Yeah.
You won't be. but yeah, I've had a couple of online kind of video swing analysis sent from Sam. So okay. I'm going to watch them, and we're going to get this driver shallowed on the way down, whether it kills me.
Is that what you're working on mainly in your game? Is it? I mean, you said earlier that off the tee you were all right. So is there anything particularly in your game that you're struggling with at the minute?
Not really. I mean, I've played the best golf I've played probably consistently all year, and that's reflected in the fact that my handicap had got as low as it had ever been. But I'm kind of getting to that point where, in terms of kind of big events, that's pretty much it for the season. The winter series events that we do at Felixstowe starts up again in 4 weeks' time, second Tuesday in October. So it's just that time of year really where I start to think about, you know, what do I want to try and get out of my game this winter? So I've not been working on anything, and I've been hitting the ball well off the tee, but I've been hitting freewood quite a lot. And you know what my driver swing's been like over the years. You're seeing it enough on social media. Like it's looking much, much better than what it was, but I still have a tendency to kind of leave that face open and just hit over the top slightly.
Yeah.
So we're really going to try and work on that club face control and shallowing it on the way down, and try and get a bit more of an in to out swing. You know, I don't need to be hitting big massive draws. I just like to just have it under control a little bit more. So that's what I'm going to try and do. And yeah, it kind of starts here. It might be a bit early to go, but why not? I enjoy the practice, so you know, it's not like it's a daunting thing ahead. Like, you know, it's not like I've got 4 months of, you know, pain in front of me. It's just a bit of work, but I enjoy looking at it. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy watching it. So that's where we are, mate. That's where we are.
Yeah, well, there's no bad time to work on your game, really. So I think getting and to be honest, we've just started on the Golf Shake Instagram, which hopefully will be coming out in the next week or so. We filmed a few. I don't know if you've watched any of the little kind of coaching tip sort of things that we've been doing, but we've kind of thrown it open to people who want to send in either swing videos that they want us to have a look at, and we'll kind of do a bit of a Instagram reel talking them through a few things that might help, but also any particular shots or situations that you find yourselves in where you're struggling, more than happy to help as well. So if you can send those in, either you can just direct messages on Instagram if you want to, or email info@golfshake.com if you want to, or, you know, my social media, whatever. Just, you can find me, Matt, whoever on there. If you need any help with your golf game, yeah, just ask. Yeah,
don't more. Come to me for help with the golf game. You can come to me and ask me about where to play. That's my forte. I can tell you about nice golf courses.
But no, I mean, you know, in my kind of day-to-day life at the club, I'm teaching people every single day of the week. And, you know, you see every single weird, wonderful type of technique and golf swing, and, you know, you find a way to help these people and get them playing better golf. So, yeah, no matter what your swing looks like, whether you think you've got the worst golf swing in the world or the best golf swing in the world, we can all do with some help. So, yeah, please get in touch. We're more than happy to do that. And hopefully your swing will be making its way to Instagram very soon.
Yeah. Here's a question for you then.
Yeah.
How do you deal with, I'm going to pick my word carefully, how do you deal with douchebags on the golf course?
You're playing with?
Yeah. So the guy that I played with on Friday, we were in three balls, right? And it was just one of the other guys that I played with on Friday. And I'm pretty sure he won't be listening to his podcast because he probably thinks he's above this podcast. Okay. But it's just one of those guys, right? If you told him the sky was blue and the grass was green, he'd disagree with you and tell you why you're wrong.
Okay.
He had this incredible, I posted this on my Instagram. He had this incredible, terrible habit of, you know, when you hit a putt and somebody says, oh, good putt, or, oh yeah, nice one, mate, well done, just as it lips out. I was like, if he does that once more, I want to wrap my putt around his head.
Have a word.
Then, can you though? Can you say to him, like, how do you, you know, like, because in my head, I'm thinking to myself, like, just say, look, mate, can you keep your comments to yourself? But how do you say it without coming across as a bit of an ass? That's what I would struggle with.
I'd just say, can you just wait until either the ball's gone in to say it was a good putt or not for starters? And
yeah,
if he keeps doing it over and over again, I'd just keep having a word, and then, you know, be a bit firmer with him if he's still doing it. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately in this game, you can't pick who you play with every time, and sometimes you do play with some absolute numpties. But
I mean, like, even there was one shot where I've kind of played short of a bunker. It was a good shot, but I'm hitting over the bunker, which is kind of raised in front of me. So he's off to the left, looking down the hole. I'm hitting over the bunker, so I can't see where my ball's going, and it's kind of hitting into sun as well. And I just said, you know, I said to both of them, like, lads, just, you know, keep your eye on this for me, please, as you would do.
Yeah.
If you can't see where it's going, so anyway, I hit it, as I hit it, I looked over to him, and he's just got his head in his bag, like he's sorting stuff out in his bag, and I was like, oh, you got any ideas? He's like, oh no, sorry mate, I didn't see it, and it led to me losing the ball. He was like, oh, I think it went right, and I didn't feel like a strike that went right to me. But he was looking down in his bag.
So how would you know what you had in your ball pocket?
Yeah. And then there was another time where I was, he was kind of walking up from behind me, and I was hitting a second shot into a par four. And literally, just as I got to the top of the backswing, he started talking, but he was talking to himself. Yeah. You know, and that led to me hitting a pretty bad shot, because at that point, this is like in the afternoon, it's, you know, probably hole 29 or 30 out of 36. I'm getting a little bit tired, not played great. I've had that all day.
And then, was he playing well or badly?
No. He was playing, you know, equally as badly as what I was.
Okay.
And I just, like, it almost made me feel like I couldn't get off the golf course quick enough towards the end, which was a shame.
Yeah, but then I suppose if you're not playing well, those things affect you more, don't they? And you know, if you were playing a great round of golf, would it have annoyed you as much? Maybe not. You
know, I feel like if I was playing better, I probably would have been in a better frame of mind to have said something.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I've
played loads of PGA events where you play with the biggest one for me is people who play really slow, and I just cannot fathom why they do it, and it really annoys me. But it's kind of one of those that I wouldn't tell them to play quicker. All I'd do is make sure I was doing something else, so I just kind of ignore what they're doing.
Yeah.
go about what I'm doing, just take this the same amount of time as I normally do, because I normally play fairly quick, as you know, you've played a lot of golf with me, but yeah, I don't muck about. And and yeah, I just kind of try and look the other way, try and busy myself with other stuff, you know, and just try and let them get on with it, so I'm not watching them, because it's actually making me, I'm not sure angry is the right word, but it kind of frustrates me watching them go through a routine that takes 45 seconds before they hit every shot. I just absolutely no idea why people do it.
Yeah. See, I can almost accept that if then they're kind of head down and they're away. But it's the people that do that and then they're, you know, they're sorting stuff out, they're pushing their trolley up and down, they're dawdling up the fairway, they're stopping to have a chat. I'm like, do you know, I actually don't mind if people want to take a little bit of time over their shot.
It's when you find people and they kind of leave their bag in the wrong place. And
that sort of thing.
Stuff and just like, oh my God. But yeah. I mean, that doesn't really happen that much in professional golf, but it does when you're playing pro-ams and stuff. You're literally looking at the group in front and there's normally one or two people that are pretty clueless that are, and you kind of get to the stage where you're on the golf course looking how many holes they've lost to the group in front or where the gaps are and who's causing problems and stuff, rather than actually concentrating on what you're doing and just taking your time, really. It's a difficult thing. It's a difficult trap to sort of fall into because, like I say, if you're playing great golf, generally you're not that bothered. Some people will absolutely tell you and be very blunt about it. And I applaud those sort of people, but I've never been that kind of person who wants to be confrontational about golf, really. It's just I want to get on with it. But I kind of, the older I get and the more experienced I get, the less I can tolerate playing golf, really.
I just like, we were out there, both rounds were 4.5 hours for three balls.
Yeah, which is too long, really, isn't it?
It's too long for me. And then funnily enough, this guy who I think hit two off the 18th in the morning, two tee balls off the 18th, couldn't find them both.
Oh, wow.
And then went back to the tee to hit a third. And at that point, you know, your score is high enough. Like, I'm not scared of the NR if I feel like it's going to kind of speed up the process. But when he's going back to, you know, on the 18th, you're loads over par. You're then going back to the 18th to hit your third shot. You know, it takes you about 25 minutes to play the 18th hole. And then you look at your watch, you think, right, we've been out there for 4.5 hours. We've got 20 minutes to have lunch and get back out. And this guy's the first one to moan about not having enough time between rounds. And I'm like, if you got to move on a little bit, then, you know, we might not have been rushing around so much. But I'm not going to say it ruined a day. It certainly takes the edge off. When those sort of things happened, I recognise that it's an area that I need to work on because, you know, ultimately I question myself in this and I think to myself, right, I need to learn to not let these sort of things bother me. But I look, it's almost like a woodpecker pecking at your head, you know, and eventually you just want to turn around and yell at the guy. But I didn't. And also he got in his car and just drove off at the end. He didn't buy a drink. At lunchtime or after the round, he just signed his card.
That sums him up then, doesn't it? Really? Yeah. I forgot who you're playing with.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but the other guy was nice. The other guy was good lad. Hit the ball really well, actually.
Good. I'm sure he had a few things to say about that Pillock as well.
He seemed a lot more laid back than what I did. But then he was playing better. So maybe there is something in that.
Yeah, you never know. It's difficult, mate. You know, there's no... Because you don't want to come across as a Pillock yourself, do you, by telling someone off? But yeah, I mean, sometimes you've just got to say to these people. Otherwise, they don't learn and they don't get any better, do they?
No, definitely not.
But yeah, I mean, I mean, that's a whole new thing. We got into this, you know, talking about how to improve your golf game. I suppose this is a way of doing it as well. But I meant more the technical sort of aspect rather than kicking off.
Yeah,
of course. But yeah, I mean, it's. It's definitely a part of the game that is probably not really thought about. And when we're talking about coaching the game, it is one thing you've got to deal with, isn't it? And, you know, playing with varying different people. I mean, I know at your club, are a lot of the
comps kind of drawn, or do you play with the same people all the time, or how does it work?
Do you know, it's an interesting conversation, this, because where I was a member previously, they had drawn weekends and non-drawn weekends.
Yeah.
So one weekend you'd have a non-drawn medal or Stableford, the next weekend you'd have a drawn.
Yeah.
And I always felt the drawn were really good for new members, for integration, for meeting new people.
Yeah.
Because you chuck your name in for the competition, you know you're going to get a tea time between, I don't know, say 8 and 9.30.
Do you just put your name down in a time slot? Is that how it works?
No. So you didn't even, because back then, like booking wasn't as commonly used as it is now after COVID, for example.
Okay.
So you literally just went on and said, right, I'm, you know, on the app, and said, right, I'm going to sign up for the Saturday drawn medal, for example.
Yeah.
And then you got your tea time a couple of days before, and you see who you was playing with. And as somebody that joined the golf club and not knowing anyone, it was a really good way to kind of meet people. And you soon work out who you'd like to play with again, who you wouldn't like to play with again.
Yeah. I wish we did more stuff like that, because it's just not ours. Is everyone books in their four ball and plays with the same four ball every week, pretty much. And you get the odd space here and there. But yeah, we do have that problem where anyone who joins the club and doesn't already have a group that they play with really struggles.
Yeah,
Having to take the odd space here and there with people that they don't know and kind of hope that they get on all right with them. But
I mean, it's definitely I've seen all different variations, especially since I've been a member where I am now at Stowmarket, because when I joined there, it was there was no tee booking; it was still ball in the chute.
Yeah.
So if as somebody that had joined the golf club with no friends, I didn't know anyone there, it was kind of like float around on the first tee on a Saturday morning, hope that there was a two or a three ball and see if you could jump in and get a game.
Yeah.
The tee booking system definitely helps people, I think, but you still have a bit about yourself to kind of put your name down with two or three people that you don't know, you've never met before.
Yeah, it's difficult. When it's a drawn one, you're almost all four individuals, aren't you, being put together, or three individuals or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're joining an already established three or four ball, because it's almost like a three-on-one situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Now at Stowmarket, like all the competitions, the midweeks, absolutely everything is non-drawn.
Yeah.
So yeah, like you say, so like I've got groups that I play with on a Saturday and a Sunday morning. So you're not necessarily playing with the same people every week, but it's pretty much a core of maybe four from seven or eight every week. And then apart from club champs, the odd major comp might be drawn, but that's like yesterday there was a president's putter or whatever it was in the afternoon, but that's, with all due respect, like the seniors that are kind of enter those sort of things that have a tee sheet. But
I think there's arguments.
We have a tee sheet on club champs, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, clubs I think should mix it up a bit. We do have maybe a couple of competitions a year that are drawn. I think it would definitely help integrate different people into the golf club, and you get to meet different groups as well. I mean, there's some people at Howley where I am that, you know, they've played the same four ball for, you know, it could be 10, 15 years, and guys that play, you know, 40 minutes after them, they have no idea who they are. Do you know what I mean? They've never, they literally don't know who they are. And they play 40 minutes apart every week, never bump into each other before golf, never bump into each other after golf. It's just like the weirdest thing ever. I suppose from when I'm working in the shop, I know everybody that comes in.
Yeah.
And I know pretty much when they're going to play in general, and pretty much what most of the handicaps are off the top of my head. So it just seems very odd to me, growing up at a golf club as I did, where all the major competitions were drawn, and some were put out in handicap order. So you would generally play with, you know, when I was a kid, it was all the guys that were in the sort of scratch team and the second team, because anyone sort of below seven handicap, really, you were getting drawn with them generally in competitions.
Yeah.
But then there were some where you could just randomly get drawn with, you know, I could be playing off three and randomly get drawn with someone off 17. And that's great. It's awesome. You just meet people that you'd never have played with generally. And, you know, even to the point where once you've played 18 holes of golf with somebody, you you know, they walk past you in the car park the next week and you know their name and you say hello, and it's just it just builds a more friendly atmosphere at the golf club, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the club are good at putting on events for new members, but there's still no integration with, you know, so like you might have, I don't know, say you've got 10 new members in a month, so you do like a, they do like a new members Texas scramble evening or something where you get all the new members together. But the problem is they're not integrating with, you know, the 700 other members that are at the golf club.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you kind of, by default, they go and kind of get pigeonholed together as new members, which is a shame. But it's a tough one to get right, really. It is a tough one to get right.
Yeah, it absolutely is, because you don't want to annoy the core membership who've been there for years and don't like change and want to play with the same three guys that they've played with every week for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
But then there has to be some element of, you know, maybe whether you just do it a few times a year, I don't know, you know, on the odd occasion where it's not really going to annoy people too much, but, you know, they're signing up for it and kind of, I don't know whether you put your name down in sort of time slots. So like you said, between sort of, you know, our first time on a Saturday is 6:30 in the summer. So 6:30 till sort of 8:00 and then like a 8:01 to 9:30 and just get people to put their names down and then you just jumble them up randomly. Do you know what I mean? So that might be a way of doing it, because some people book tee times based on they want to get around a golf played and get out of there, don't they? Do you know what I mean? It's a certain time of day that they want to play, particularly the guys that we have to go off first. They just want to be around in 3 hours, have some food after and get off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
it's difficult. It'd be interesting if people have an opinion on this, whether your golf club does anything different or revolutionary that I've not really heard of. But I suppose we want more people to enjoy golf as much as possible. And if this is a barrier to people staying members at clubs who have joined, or because we've got a lot of that over the past few years with lots of new members joining golf clubs. And the last thing we want is for them to have an excuse not to join next year. And this could be one, the fact that they can't integrate into the club and they're maybe not enjoying it as much as they could do. But, you know, there's obviously things that some clubs do very well to ensure that everyone does enjoy themselves. So yeah, it'd be good to hear from any of you out there listening, whether there's any sort of weird and wonderful ways that your club gets people involved. I suppose we've started at Howley doing sort of multi-tee competitions as well. So allowing people to play off reds, yellows and whites all in the same competition, obviously, because your course is rated and the handicaps change depending on what tee you play off. Also, you know, I think it'll be very soon down the line that we have a few competitions where men and women are playing together, and that will be great as well, which we haven't really had so far, but I can only see that happening more and more in the future, which would be fantastic too.
Would be good.
Mate, that's about all we've got time for this week. We've literally spoken for nearly 50 minutes on the Solheim Cup and what's going on in golf, and a bit of a rant at the end on not only our own golf games and tuition and how to get better, but also how to integrate within a golf club. Yeah. I think we've covered a lot there, Matt, to be honest.
We have. I've got one more thing.
Okay, go. Oh, yeah. Sorry, we cannot finish without this. Come on.
We can't finish without this. So I texted our friend Matt Lockwood this morning.
Okay.
I've heard his statement. Okay. And I just said, look, we're recording this week's podcast at 9:00. Have you got anything you want to add? And his response.
For those of you that haven't listened, Matt Lockwood is a golfer at your club, Matt, right? As of last week, you may tell me some revolutionary news in the next few seconds. He hadn't qualified for your season-ending Pinder Trophy, which is basically anyone who wins a competition throughout the year gets put through to this to compete in almost like a Champions of Champions event. Yeah,
yeah.
He hadn't qualified.
And it started out as light-hearted banter, right? Because everyone had qualified and he hadn't.
It's all light-hearted banter, Matt. But yeah. I think it's getting to him a bit. But anyway, right, he's got a statement to read out at the end of the podcast. Go for it.
So I said to him, anything you want to add? And his response was, nothing to add this week. Solid weekend, but chasing 42 points isn't happening. Apologies to you, Ryan, and the fans, as you may be talking about this for some time.
Okay. Brief, to the point. Like it. I felt like I should have had some like low violin music playing over the background.
Yeah.
But, right, so it's another week has gone by, and he hasn't qualified. So we're hoping this week he's going to pull his socks up, get a hot putter, and maybe get himself into the equation. But yeah, who knows?
I did text him. I texted him yesterday afternoon and said, look, there's a men's midweek medal next Tuesday. And I said, I'd love to be there to witness you fail to qualify for the Pindar again. And his response was brilliant. Thanks. And then I just said, well, someone's got to be there to see it, right? Otherwise he can't enter the comp.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Very good.
He'll be all right.
Matt, good luck. Hopefully you're going to qualify this week. And to you, Matt, thanks again. It's been awesome.
Cheers. Catch you next week.
Next week, we'll know everything that's happened in the Solheim and look forward to the Ryder Cup. See you soon.